You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
You guys are the experts. You'll probably have to analyze that.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Kansas City, Missouri, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my basement, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. What's up, boys? How's it going? It's a Monday. I'm feeling good. My scarves are vertical. We'll have some horizontal ones very soon, because Tommy Scoops is going to join us on this wonderful Monday. How we feeling? How you doing, Dave? Do you have any emotion in your face?
You started with from Kansas City, Missouri. I'd turn it off.
I'm
bringing an appeal out to our fans to give us a new intro that they would like to hear, because it's only cool to talk about the place you're recording from if you're recording from a place that anyone cares about. You're not doing that anymore. So
wow.
We need to change this.
I want you to know I do care about Kansas City because I've been there a couple times and I love the barbecue. So don't let David get you down with his coastal bias.
Oh, look, you know you were wearing the same T-shirt until just now?
I yes. did notice that.
Why so. Didn't you well say done. Something? You
and why didn't I go get mine out of wherever it is hidden away in a box? Look, half of Kansas City is upset because the Kansas City, Kansas side is like, I don't think you actually slandered us.
Yeah.
But the Kansas City, Missouri side is a little bit unhappy right
and
now.
And in fairness, I do like the Missouri side more than the Kansas side. So I probably shouldn't have done that.
Also. Just dropping bombs left and right here. I don't know what to do. New York is what it is supposed to be, is what I feel inside of me, but I know I can't say it.
Times change.
Because
you got to roll with it.
From these guys are in New York, and I'm in. If you have suggestions, let me know. Producer Anders, reminder of the day here. Matthew Hoppe, hat trick for Schalke. I barely know anything about Matthew Hoppe. And so, fellow Matthew Doyle, what do you know about this hat trick hero for Schalke that we should all know?
Not a ton. He's from Southern California. He came through the Barca SC Academy, which is also where Julian Araujo came through and Caden Clark. So he spent a couple years there and then signed with Schalke a couple years ago and was good, not excellent, but pretty good and pretty promising for their youth teams. And given that Schalke were on a historic winless streak, and didn't really have answers from the first team. He worked his way into the rotation about a month back, maybe a little longer than that, and then just had this absolutely monumental performance. He is a true number nine. His hold-up play is not great, but he's super fast, and judging from what we've seen of his brief time in the Bundesliga, his runs are really good. Like those types of runs that he made, I would kill to see Josh Sargent, who I still think is the most talented forward in the U.S. pool, but who has not put it together. I would kill to see Josh Sargent make those types of runs where you're really putting pressure on the center backs. And instead of trying to occupy the center backs, you're finding space and you're making them react to you. So it was a really good performance. But the test, as with any young striker, is like, what, let's see what happens the next time out and then the next time though. He's a 19-year-old and he scored a hat trick in the Bundesliga. He is the first American ever to score a Bundesliga hat trick.
I mean, I was gonna say, yeah, there's like the, you know, the measured, let's wait and see, the future is what's most important, but there's also the holy crap, I just scored a hat trick in the Bundesliga and I'm 19 years old side of this. Like, that's
they were all
awesome.
Sweet finishes. Yes. Like the first one was a little chip on the run, you know, in like a breakaway, and he got the keeper to drop and then chipped him. The second one was like a pure Landon Donovan finish. Remember how anytime Landon got in on goal, he would feint to his right and get the keeper to go down and then just dribble around him and finish across his body? That was the second goal. And then the third one was such a clever disguised finish because it looked like he was going to do that second finish again, but instead he stabbed it with his right foot as the keeper dove the right. It was... Like, let's hope for this kid that this performance is what Io Akinola's performance against DC United was 8 months ago when he sort of burst onto the scene with that hat trick at the MLS's back tournament.
Give me and more of
that. He's going to get shots because that team is god awful. I think they hadn't won a game in like 15, 16 months.
Yeah.
So there's opportunity for young players.
Yeah, I'm taking them out of the lineup now.
Yeah, yeah. No. No.
Like, Schalke are still brutal to watch, but hey, if a young American's out there scoring every other game, I'll take it. I'll watch him.
Oh, congratulations, Matthew Hoppe. What a moment for him. He will never forget that. Such cool stuff. This is a mailbag episode, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We got so much stuff from you on Twitter this morning. We had a ton of stuff in the email and text lines as well. So we're just going to run through it all. We'll see how much time we spend on each topic. We'll just kind of go with our guts, and we'll start with Nick on Twitter. Speaking of, what was that old Nickelodeon show? It had something to do with guts. Anyway, can we please get some MLS matches on Nickelodeon? I didn't have cable, so I didn't have that back in the day. There was an NFL game on Nickelodeon, and I didn't really know that. And producer Anders explained this to me, basically that they sort of made it for that audience, and they had younger talent, and they, I'm not going to say dumbed down the broadcast a little bit, but they simplified, let's say. My question to you guys is, what would an MLS broadcast on Nickelodeon look like? What should it look like? Are there channels that we should be on that we're not on? And can I pitch to you a homegrown academy combined five-a-side tournament at the All-Star game, basically with very, very different broadcast techniques, very intimate, very trash talk, very like personality driven as an idea for that channel to have these young guys that they probably watch Nickelodeon, you know, their parents probably sprung for cable, unlike mine, be on the platform and just be able to introduce themselves. Yeah. No, nobody's going for it.
You just asked us like 13 questions.
Yeah, that was like a minute and a half long filibuster with seven questions in there. Go ahead, David.
So one of the best parts about the NFL broadcast was they turned replays into Nickelodeon style cartoon graphics. It took them like a couple minutes. So they're showing like the touchdown play, but everyone's got a square head and a square body and they're all like moving like this. So I'm in favor of that for sure. Bringing that into an MLS game. And then I would take away, so we had a few years ago, right, where you could tweet a hashtag and a picture would be taken from the corner flag live at an MLS game. And then this game, they had digital slime cannons that shot every time they scored a touchdown. I would fuse those ideas and have fans controlling the ability to slime the game from behind the goals in the supporter section. You're welcome.
So live slime cannons, middle of the game, just firing.
Absolutely.
Choose your target. Take them down. Okay. Yeah. I like that. What's your Nickelodeon connection, Doyle? Is that too far in the past for you? Did you watch Nickelodeon?
I remember Double Dare. And I remember that you can't do that on television, which is where the slime came from. But I didn't know this was happening with the game last night. And I got to be honest with you, I kind of tuned out during our pre-show meeting because I was reading about the Corey Baird trade. Mm. So I didn't know we were even doing this segment. So I'm just I'm kicking it back to this gotcha. Is a touch pass back to Gas Man. Gas, whatever you say here is going to be my suggestion.
Okay. Second idea.
Okay.
Tommy Pickle's grandfather as the commentator complaining about everything and everyone. That's my second idea because Rugrats is the greatest television show in history, undisputed.
I will jump on board that suggestion. I will also just suggest to go back to the All-Star Game side. Instead of playing soccer, let's just take that out. We're just going to do Legends of the Hidden Temple homegrowns and academy players and run them through basically an obstacle course as they attempt to get totems and other such things and wear cool helmets and matching t-shirts. All right, that's it for that one. That's the silly side. Let's get to the serious side. CL on Twitter hit us up and said, I'm sure you'll cover it more in the next 10 days, but there is so little info about the draft class out there. That's the Superdraft 2021 presented by Adidas, of course. Who do you guys like? Which teams need to have a good draft? We will tackle this in full with Charlie Davies next Tuesday, which gives me an opportunity to give you the programming note. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is Monday. We will not be recording or releasing a podcast on that day. That's a good day to reflect on the history of this nation and what Martin Luther King Jr. was able to do within the system in the U.S. and what he wasn't able to do as well. So on Tuesday, we will do that with Charlie Davies. It's going to be at 2 p.m. Eastern on January 21st. The Super Draft is going to be streamed across MLS platforms, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, the site, the app. Pluto TV will also have it. We're just streaming the first round. It'll be about 2 hours or so. There are three rounds in this year's draft. There are teams that had fourth round draft picks. that they acquired in trades, like five of them. Those fourth round draft picks will now be extra picks at the end of the third round. If that makes perfect sense to you, you've been listening to Extra Time for a long time, or too long, or whatever you want to say. I am hosting this thing. Doyle Davies will be on. Devin Kerr will be talking to those super draft picks as it all happens. Let's just go, Doyle, with the one name you're thinking about most, because we have a lot to cover today. Ivis Kolarcep is all over the Generation Adidas class, as always. He's reporting right now that Clemson midfielder Philip Mayaka, Virginia Tech midfielder Daniel Pereira, and Wake Forest forward Calvin Harris are all going to sign those GA deals. Those are not official. That's just what he's reporting at this time. What name stands out to you, and give us a quick rundown?
Philip Mayaka. He's a Kenyan, so he would take an international spot, but he's worth it. He'll be the number one pick for Austin, and he fits what they need like a glove, because even though he played some attacking midfield and some wing for Clemson in college, he is kind of a true high-usage, box-to-box central midfielder, and he's got a very good range of passing. He has a very, very good nose for the ball. He's smooth on the ball as well, and he's got a little bit of edge and a little bit of toughness to him. You know, he's definitely in college more of a skill player than a tough guy, but he comes out of his 50-50s with the ball. And he reminds me actually of a young Dax McCarty when Dax was coming into MLS. Dax was an attacking midfielder. Dax was like more of a 10 than an 8, eventually became more of an 8 than a 10, and eventually became a 6. And I could see Mayaka coming in here and being like following that kind of path. The difference is Mayaka has, I mean, he has really superb athleticism as well. So his field coverage is very good. Now, obviously, it's all projection because he is still just a prospect. But I like, he is a no-brainer number one pick for this Austin team. And from what I have seen of him, and from people who know college has said about him, He is the type of player who maybe they'll have for a couple of years and then can be able to sell for a lot of money overseas because he's that level of talent.
Well, it's a little bit of an unknown with the super draft. We know that, but there are players that come into this league and impact it in a very real way. You only have to look at like a Daryl DK or Henry Kessler from last year, even an Alistair Johnson that we didn't really talk up a ton, a starting right back for a playoff team in this league. Let's talk about a guy who went a little bit of a different direction into Major League Soccer. He would have been super draft eligible if he wasn't a homegrown, and RSL signed Corey Baird as a homegrown. He became a standout player in the league. He got caps for the national team, and he is no longer a Real Salt Lake player. Just this morning, we got the email here. $500,000 in GAM, general allocation money, spread across 2021 and 2022, plus a 2021 international roster spot and some future considerations, probably depending on his level of production. Corey Baird is an LAFC player. That is interesting, Dave. That is very interesting. It feels like a really smart move for LAFC, and it feels probably like there's something, like there's, you know, a lot of the iceberg is still underwater for RSL, let's say.
I hope so for RSL, because the first reaction I had to hearing about this was, what are they doing with those assets that's going to be better for them than having Corey Baird on their roster? A homegrown guy, a guy who's had production for them for a team that hasn't really had the best history of going out and getting players from outside this league. But taking that away, when I look at it for LAFC, I think there's the one hand, which is, let's say they don't change a lot in their attack over the next few months, which means they don't sell Diego Rossi and Brian Rodriguez. Rossi or Baird could play as a center forward. They've played Vela there as well. So now you have higher level players that you can play across those spots. But the other thing is, this is a club where right now they spend about $700,000 in central midfield and have the best in MLS, arguably. And they've gotten a lot of great deals, but they're going to lose Eddie Atuesta. They're probably going to lose Rossi, and they're probably going to sell Rodriguez. And what we talked about going into MLS Cup was Seattle's ability to maintain their level was because they had Roldan on their books. They have a homegrown in Jordan Morris that you can kind of guarantee and build expensive pieces around. And so when I look at LAFC, they need some continuity as they start to sell great young players. I think Segura is going to be a part of that. I think Latif and Kay will be a part of that. And now Baird can be a guy like that. He's not looking at this as, how do I get to Europe? He's looking at this as, I could be a stud for LAFC and he could be there for a while. So I love this trade for LAFC, and it makes a lot of sense with the Farfan trade they've made of just trying to find assets in this league.
It makes sense for Corey Baird too, because you said he's probably not thinking, how do I get to Europe? He's probably thinking, how do I get back into the national team? And for Corey Barrett, the route back into the national team picture is to be somewhere where he toggles between center forward and both wings and scores a lot of goals. And that's exactly, I mean, we know he'll be positionally flexible for LAFC. And I suspect that playing in that attack with that midfield behind him, he will end up scoring a lot of goals, you know, back to what we saw from him when he first came on the scene. So it's good for, it makes a lot of sense for Corey Barrett. It makes a lot of sense for LAFC. On the surface, it doesn't make as much sense for RSL. But they have, you know, they have a young DP winger in Jason Ramirez. They have in Chris Garcia, a very highly rated homegrown winger coming through the pipeline. They still have not been able to sign a center forward who moves the needle and puts the ball in the net and is clearly the first choice. So maybe trading Baird and getting a little bit of money and getting a, you know, his raw, like maybe this opens.
Doyle's
that
trying
up
to convince himself live on air through his own.
I don't want to just crush this from an RSL perspective, but like, if there's not another big move coming for a proven goal scorer, this doesn't make sense from an RSL perspective.
Yeah, there has got to be something underneath the surface for them that we don't know yet. I mean, you would, if they're going in the right direction, which is to trend upwards. Now, the other side of this for RSL is there's a lot of uncertainty. It is now in MLS's hands, I believe, after last Friday to handle the sale of RSL. And there have been some links to some local owners who could change the fortunes, the spending profile, the ability to compete, or, you know, double down on what their existing, you know, sort of identity has been. I mean, that could be sort of that under the iceberg, you know, under the waterline thing where there is something big there, where there are big plans. We don't know yet. We have no idea.
All of that's great. And there's a very good chance that in a year, 6 months, whatever, for RSL, things look good. At that point, this deal probably still would not have made sense.
Yeah, that's the thing I was going to get to, too. It's like, you probably still want Corey Baird if possible. Yeah. So who knows? Maybe there's some contractual side of this. Maybe Corey's up for a new one. No idea. But 500K in GAM seems like a pretty darn good deal over 2 years for LAFC for a guy that, like you guys, I would expect to come into the team and make the right runs, be in the right spots, has a shown a knack for finishing before, and will be surrounded by players that will make him look awfully, awfully good. All right. Let's talk to Tommy Scoops, Tom Bogert. You know him well. You see him breaking news straight in with the stash. What's up, Tom? How's it going, man? Mr. Horizontal Scarves himself. How you feeling?
What's going on, fellas? I'd like to offer to cede all of my time for a further Nickelodeon discussion for you guys. I'm just putting it out there, producer Anders, if that's the direction you want to go, no hard feelings, because that's the segment I want to listen to.
We have
Rocco's Modern Life.
Oh, yeah.
We've missed a ton of good shows, even with our Rugrats mention.
I do have Anders in my ear. In the chat, it says request denied, but he's saying in my ear that if you have a suggestion that you may chime in at this moment before we talk about Major League Soccer.
The slime cannons has got to go by the coaches' benches. Just imagine Bruce Arena like physically ripping somebody's arm off if they had their hand on the button. Like, don't you dare, kid.
I do want to get his take on slime cannons. We'll save that for another day. And right at the end of the interview so he can hang up on us. Tell us what's going on around MLS. I saw you tweeting about this Chicago Fire signing this morning. A 17-year-old, the youngest foreign player signing in MLS history. Who is it? What's the deal?
Yeah, so Chicago signed John Duran, and this one kind of struck me as interesting based on that profile. And like you said, it's the youngest international signing in league history, you know, according to the club's release. And because he's not 18 until next December, so he's just turned 17 a month ago. So he's not 18 until next December. He can't join. He can't like be registered with MLS until 2022. So that's when the contract is for. And the club kind of moved forward on this a little earlier than they planned to, just because of some interest coming from Europe, and they kind of wanted to get the deal wrapped up now, and this will make it obviously easier for them to monitor him and help his transition over 2021 into 2022 when he can finally come to Chicago and play.
Go ahead, Dave.
I was just curious how you see Chicago in general. This is their fifth straight move of a 21 or under player, four from South America and the one from Bulgaria. What's the thought process? What's the plan right now in Chicago?
Yeah, since George Hykes came in last winter, they kind of wanted to get the team younger. Of course, they started with you can't just roll out, you know, a U23 team or something silly like that. So they did the control group of their first two DP signings and Robert Berich and Gaston Jimenez as, okay, these are in your prime. written in pen. You know what you're going to get from them. They're going to be two good MLSers. Those are their first two DPs. They added a couple more, you know, role players kind of in their mid-20s and in that kind of profile. But since then, it's been like 10 or 12 straight 21 or unders, including their five homegrown signings they made last March. But this is just all kind of their plan. And what is most interesting to me is, you know, when, you know, Heitz is obviously European and he had a lot of time at Basel and that's kind of where his network is. But you look at some of these recent signings, four of the five have come from South America. And that shows me, one, that they weren't kidding when they said that they were setting up, you know, a global scouting department, a global scouting network. And that wasn't just empty words and like, whatever, I'm going to go sign a couple Swiss players anyway, because these are the agents and the teams that I'm used to dealing with. He's really deferred a little bit. You know, the technical director, Sebastian Peltzer, is the one who spotted Duran while they were scouting their other their summer signing, Carlos Terran, who played for the same club. So it's really interesting to me that they really are kind of digging into all of these markets and not just, say, his own network of a handful of agents and teams that he worked with during Basel.
A lot of swings there for the Fire. A couple names, speaking of South America, that I just want you to give us a little bit of a scouting report on, both the status of the moves and who they are, before we jump into some questions for you that we got from listeners. How about this? Diver Caicedo and the Whitecaps. What's the deal?
So, yeah, as I reported on Friday, I believe that the deal was getting close. They agreed to acquire his Discovery rights from Nashville. I found out about that like last week, but I was told that the deal was kind of agreed to before that. So that just kind of lets you in on how long, I guess, the negotiations are taking to kind of getting this deal completely over the line. But there's been reports from South America that the price is around $2.5 million for something like 80% of his rights to keep Deportivo Cali with a bit of a sell on. And I was told that something in that region is correct. I don't know if it's exactly 2.5 or not, but this is a young winger who can play on both sides. He's a righty, so they see him as someone primarily that they want on the left side, where he can cut in. He's pacey. He's a good dribbler, and you know, his kind of goal scoring record isn't that bad. It's, you know, 7 goals and 16 assists and 67 appearances. And again, he's 20 years old, so you expect that to grow over time. But the club have kind of seen that as something that they think that can really be improved upon in, you know, the coming years in Vancouver.
Meanwhile, Nashville can trade that reportedly here because Rodrigo Pinheiro is their target, according to you. Once again, Tommy Scoops just out here scooping.
This one I got scooped by the Uruguayan club that he is about to be formerly of, Danubio. They kind of put it out almost 2 weeks ago now, and they said, you know, Rodrigo Pinheiro is continuing his career in MLS with Nashville.
Early goodbyes. I like it.
It seems like it's happened with some South American clubs. I know there was a couple last year. There's like LAFC and Seattle kind of dealt with this, where the clubs announced it way earlier than they were planning. And like, there's been a couple, like, I'm not going to name which specific ones, where I've been told, yeah, he hasn't even done a medical yet. I don't know why that they've, you know, announced this. And again,
engagement numbers, Tom. You got to get your engagement numbers up. You need the likes, you need the retweets, replies. It's all very important.
They got to scoop the MLS clubs. And you know, they're the ones being a little conservative. And South American clubs are saying, screw it, full send. Let's get it out there.
Who is Rodrigo Pinheiro? What would he bring to Nashville?
So he's a Uruguayan youth international, so the pedigree is huge there. And I know you guys say this often when it comes to some of those markets. There's usually a markup because those are the proven commodities. And we've seen how well some Uruguayans have done in this league so far. You know, obviously, Nico Ladero is the first to come to mind. But, you know, he's another one who could play on both wings. He's just another attacker that they'd add to their group. And it struck me when I was looking at depth charts and what I've been trying to create to keep my, you know, mind in it and be able to be really focused on the teams. Like, David Akam is like fourth string on either wing. Like, Handwala Buana, who they are obviously very high on, and who, you know, Matt Doyle leads the fan club for Handwala Buana.
Actually, Anders does. And he will cut you.
I know.
He will cut you off if you don't recognize that Anders has been on Team Let Handwala Cook for like 3 years now.
He doesn't play anymore, so we got to check in and see if that doesn't play for Seattle. We got to check in if that opinion holds firm. But Handwala Buana is like third string right now. It's if you'd assume that they're signing Pinheiro to be a starter, and if he is, that means that one of Randall Yao, who was a DP last year, who can be bought down, or Alex Mule, who was awesome with Nashville after acquiring him, one of those two players aren't starting. So it's kind of a sneaky deep attack. And, you know, you guys can say, or we can all say what we want about whether or not the top of that attack is going to be enough. I do believe it will be, just because, again, last year towards the end of the year, it got better and better. And Yonder Cadiz didn't start a single regular season game. And Wallabuana didn't either. And he only made a handful of appearances. So I think that there's a lot more to come from this attack. But I think that they've showed some signs of kind of what they can bring. And it's just pretty wild that a couple MLSers like Bazzi, Donlady, and Akam are so far down the depth chart they can't even see the field.
By the way, Anders is in the chat, which we should really find a way to get overlaid on the YouTube. Like, producing Anders, that is your mission for 2021. Find a way to get your commentary embedded live as we do this thing. Says that, and this will go right to my Midwestern heart, that Hedwala is just slow cooking. He's just a slow cooker. He's a crock pot, baby.
I'm in favor of one of our off-season segments, since we have like 9 months, is to make the crockpot players of MLS. Who are the slow cookers who, when you finally crack it open after 8.5 hours, ooh, that smell, it just fills the whole house.
Exactly.
I'm down for a crockpot.
You don't lift the lid. You can't lift the lid. That will ruin the final product. Keep the lid on.
The thing is done after 8.5 hours.
Exactly. You got to let it cook. That's what I'm saying. Don't lift the lid. Okay, fine. Let's get into it here. Dugan Mariev.
Bird dog over here.
Oh, boy. Dugan Mariev says, what do the Portland Timbers need to be truly competitive in CCL? Is their current striker depth the answer, another big signing, or just a strong commitment from Gio? And Tom, you had some news broke on that big signing slash current depth side. What's going on with the Timbers, and what do you think about their CCL prospects before we break that down?
So, yeah, Felipe Mora is coming back. They have a deal with Pumas, and it's always interesting to me, some of these deals, to kind of keep players and do the cap gymnastics to keep them under DP and TAM, whatever threshold that they need to do, whatever their number of GAM that they needed to acquire this offseason, which they've already done plenty of with trades that have kind of already happened. Mora's coming back. He's obviously not going to be a DP or anything, and they're very high on him. I can't give you the final fee now, but what I was told is that he had a $4 million purchase option in his original loan deal from Pumas, and they are not paying that much to get him back. And it's a kind of a situation where Pumas is going to keep some sell-on potential for him. But, you know, again, he's a 27-year-old Chilean international. He has like 5 or 6 caps, but, you know, they're very high on him. He had a really solid loan season. He battled through a couple injuries too, as a lot of other Timbers did. I believe he had, you know, something like 9 goals and 2 assists in 15-ish appearances, and that's a solid return for what they paid for him last year and you know, what they're going to be getting him for moving forward.
All right, I'll throw it to you guys. Dave, Doyle, CCL and the Timbers. You would think that a big part of it would be getting Sebastian Blanco back, but they were pretty good without him too. They have the talent. They're deep in that sense. We'll start with you, Doyle. What do you think about the Timbers in the CONCACAF Champions League?
They're not deep on the back line. I know they've signed they've got an incoming right back who's supposed to be pretty good, and they have left back. Sorry. Yes. Yeah. So left back is deep. Right back is thin. And center back position is a big question because Lloris Mabiala is kind of in limbo at the moment. But even with Lloris Mabiala, if you watch the way the Timbers played last year, anytime they were conceding possession, they were going to concede lots of shots, lots of good shots, which is why they were a disastrous team over the final 15 minutes of every single game that they had a lead or were tied in. And we saw that into the playoffs where they went up 1-0 on FC Dallas and then inevitably in stoppage time gave up the equalizer. So I do think it's almost more tactical than it is personnel related for Portland, because even if they upgrade those two spots, right back and center back, just the way they play when they're giving up possession, it really, really hurt them last year. And so I think it's something that Gio Savarese has to figure out on like a technical or tactical and a strategic level, just in terms of like who we are as a team, because they really clearly knew that for the MLS's back tournament. And then we're just a completely different team from that point onwards.
And that's the way they'd have to play in CCL, especially without Sebastian Blanco. Like, they're just not good enough to try and control the game. They do have pieces that have experience in Liga MX and in kind of regional play, which is exciting in terms of having been there, having dealt with some of that. This isn't a group the way it's consisted right now without Blanco back yet and without whatever they're filling in along the back line and missing Niashkoda that I think can contend to win CCL. What they were at MLS's back at their healthiest.
That team could do some work.
Felipe Mora great depth piece, but if you're starting him in a CCL game, things are tough. If he's your third string center forward, then your group looks awesome. That was the difference between the 3-4 months that we saw.
I do want to just throw out there, for those of you not watching on YouTube, that we now have two animal partners in soccer in the screen. Bring them up, Tom. What's his name? And then we'll get you on to NYCFC. What is that just extremely cute pup's name?
This is Mello, and he thinks that I'm taking a treat from him right now, so I think he's just trying to eat it real quick as I put
it. Is that like a Carmelo Mello?
No, it's not.
Perhaps there's some inspiration from Carmelo Anthony.
Okay, all right.
Should we rename this show the Emmanuel Quickly Show and just go from there?
Oh, my God. I'm not gonna make any Peyton Pritchard comments just yet.
I was gonna give you your 20 seconds on the Knicks. I feel like that's contractual at this point. All right, Zach Lewis, 3187, hit us up. Says NYCFC effectively have three DP spots available to them. They really haven't been linked to anybody. What's going on in the front office? What's going on in the off season? Tom, what is the deal on their DP spots in your mind? Since I know you're doing the depth charts, and then what is going on with NYCFC this off season?
So, yeah, they have two DP spots open and, you know, a treasure chest of general allocation money and trades for, you know, Alex Ring and Ronald Matarita on top of, you know, all the other, you know, roster spots and whatnot that they've kind of acquired in a couple of their offseason moves. So they're kind of this, you know, sleeping giant might put it too far and might be overselling it, but they're a team that has this huge, you know, scouting network and depth, and now they have a ton of roster flexibility and space to make some kind of key additions. You'd expect at least one, if not both, DP spots to go to the attack. But even without it, they have, you know, Tati Castellanos and Hebert and Maxi Morales and Jesus Medina, who's previously a DP. And, you know, we've all talked about his ups and downs in the league. But, you know, they're a deep team, and that's why they were able to make the Alex Ring trade. And they still have a starting center mid trio of James Sands, Keaton Parks, and Maxi Morales with, you know, Nicolas Acevedo behind him, who I'm, you know, really big on. Even though he only got 100 or so minutes last year, he seems like a real player and someone who's going to impress with, you know, extra chances next year. So I'm just really interested to see kind of how they fill this, how they utilize all of that space.
Well, so one of the obvious additions is going to be Cacha Acevedo's Uruguay youth national teammate, Santi Rodriguez. He was purchased by City Football Group a couple of months ago, and he's on loan to their feeder club down in Uruguay. And the idea, I haven't seen it officially reported, but it seems pretty likely that his next stop is going to be the Bronx, right?
Hopefully. I don't have anything definitive on that. But from who I've talked to at NYCFC, they at least weren't telling me anything is done there, and that there's still at least a possibility, if not, you know, some momentum that he might go to Girona or Girona in La Liga, really? Another one of their affiliate clubs. So, you know, I guess we'll see. He's another one who has a really good pedigree, and the highlights that I've watched, because, you know, I'm not going to lie to you and say that I watch Uruguayan soccer all the time. The highlights I've watched, he seems like a player, somebody who'd be really interesting. And it'd be fun to have that, you know, Yango Herrera, Angelino kind of year or two in MLS before heading to Europe. But I guess we'll see if he goes to NYCFC or Girona.
Yaha
just
Herrera,
for anyone listening to the podcast who's not watching us on YouTube, that loud chewing noise is Matt Doyle. So we apologize for that in the background.
He got his treat. Mello got his treat. All right, before we let you go and let Mello have some me time in the old office there, Tom, I do have two quick ones for you. Reggie Cannon, you tweeted an update on him, a little clause triggered in that transfer deal with FC Dallas. And then you have a little more for us on Mark McKenzie. We discussed that, of course, on the last show when it went official. But help us break down both of those. One, a move that happened a bit ago, and one that just happened.
Yeah, so we'll start with Reggie. This was always the idea in that, however they structured the deal, it was $2 million up front, and then it was going to get to 3.25, you know, barring some catastrophic events or some huge, like, misjudgment in talent, in that it was just a 15 games played for Boavista triggered another $1.25 million to Dallas for a further 25% of his rights, meaning that if they sold him before he played 15 games, Dallas would have gotten half of his transfer fee rather than now it'll be 25%, which is still a very big, you know, sell-on clause. And, you know, that would be one I'd expect to happen within – honestly, within a year. I'd be surprised if he's there by, you know, February 1st in 2022, just because, you know, there was obviously the Lille connection, and that's been clouded a little bit with what's happening in France. I know for a fact that Lille weren't the only French team looking at him. I know Taylor Twellman has kind of teased out some stuff about European clubs looking at him. there's been no specifics there, but look, he's been a bright spot on a team that's been just not that good this year. They're, you know, towards the bottom in Portugal. But again, he started every single game and been, you know, a rare point of positivity for Boavista even throughout a coaching change. And as for Mark McKenzie, as I reported, the transfer fees in the region of $6 million, with a sell-on clause that's, you know, similar to the Brandon Aaronson deal, as well as, you know, further potential for add-on. So that fee could climb past, you know, six-ish or whatever it is, which is, again, just incredible business for a team in, you know, a pandemic, no less, and going to Genk as he is. And that sell-on clause is going to be very valuable. But, you know, as had been reported in the summer, you know, Celtic bid for him and it was rejected. He was ready to go both mentally and physically. But the club were really pushing to keep him through the end of the year to push for the trophy that they ended up getting. And it was just kind of perfect for all parties. Like, hey, he did his part. He happily stayed for a few more months and we got our trophy and like, we're not going to stand in his way. And as a bonus effect, they got a better transfer fee from Genk.
They got a better transfer fee. And from a U.S. national team perspective, he's going to a much better league. Like Belgium's a really good league right now. Whereas the Scottish Premier League is just a joke. So to send him to Genk, who are better league and they're second in that league. So they have they're a strong second place. They have a shot to end up in the Champions League next year. So it really does check every box. It was a good bit of business from the union.
By the way, that I just imagined as you said that, Doyle, and then thought back on so many previous Twitter moments from you. That was like your slime cannon right there. Like Scottish Premier League fans, supporters roll out here. Doyle's just out with the slime cannon, just bap, 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 bap.
Doyle realized that Tom Bogart had never been tagged in a Matt Doyle versus SPL Twitter thread. So realized if he could pull him in this video, the guy on the top is Tom Bogart. Get him in there.
Bogart, gosh.
Nice.
Oh, boy. All right, that's it. Thank you so much, Tom. We appreciate you. Tell people how they can follow you and check your work.
Cheers, fellas. Yeah, just Twitter at Tom Bogert, MLSsoccer.com. Sure to see my name plenty on.
For SPL folks, that's at TOMBOGERT. Again, TOMBOGERT. He has been slandering all that is. This
Tom, we need more mellow picks on your
yes,
Twitter feed.
More mellow picks. The brand is strong. The brand is strong. All right, Tom, thank you so much. Let's keep it rolling with more fan questions. He mentioned Angelino and he mentioned Yangel Herrera, and that brings us to Cesar Hugo on Twitter, who says, who had the best loan season, full or half, in MLS history, but had to go back after that one single season, and God knows this is the perfect extra time question. We spent a ton of time rolling through Wikipedia and Transfer Market and anywhere we could get our hands on information. The first one that jumped to mind was you, Dave. You had this one. It was a good one.
Yeah, my two that I have down are Borek Dojkal, who was the Czech Republic international that Philly took on loan. And it's kind of at a weird time where I almost couldn't remember who was on loan because it was a team at the time that they had Tranquilo Barneta in midfield. They had Vincent Noguera. All guys who were here, left. And so it was kind of hard to remember which one was even on loan, but it was Dojkal, who I think led the league in assists his 1 year in MLS. And then the other one that came up, which I don't know if I fairly agree with, is Bleerum Jamaili, because he was on loan, but he was under the Joey Saputo tree, which means he was in the family the whole time. But he came on loan, of course, to Montreal. I think he played in the World Cup technically as a Montreal player, and then now is back
so,
in the Middle East or China.
So are we separating out then players like Dojkal? Like the Union had no connection with it was a Chinese team. I think he was
yeah,
alone
I think so.
From. As those types of loans as compared to like City Football Group or Joey Saputo Club Tree or yeah. Red Bull Global type of loans, because those really are different.
They are
right?
different.
I think they're different.
Did the earthquakes, and this was the one I thought you were going to go to, Dave, because it was a great one back in the day. Simon Dawkins.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
Did the earthquakes have a relationship with Tottenham? Like that feels like one of those weird connections that might have happened in that era where it was like, wait, so, what? We got a press release that says they're connected to this Brazilian club or this club, and it's like, what was that about? I don't know if it was, but Simon Dawkins is like one of the poster children for this one. He was absolutely incredible.
He was good. I wouldn't say absolutely.
Okay. In 20 whatever, you know, early 2000s terms, he was incredible.
Well, the team was great when he was there.
Yeah, it was the Goonie season. He was a big part of that. And then he was gone, and then he came back as a DP, and the Goonie magic was all dried up.
Oh my God, wasn't it?
It was dry.
I think it just in terms of that type of thing, like Simon Dawkins and Dochkal are the two who are up there. Dochkal had the better season, 5 goals and 18 assists, and I want to say like 2,500 minutes. He's one of the best number 10s in the league in 2018, and 2018 was an awesome year. And then Dawkins wasn't quite as impressive individually, but what that team did and what they meant in playing a part of that, I think those are the two that kind of stand out the most, though Yamil Assad does have an argument.
Yeah, he was a 2-year though, right? That was 2. No? Because it would have been...
Yamil was gone from Atlanta after 2017.
He then went to D.C. on loan. DC,
yeah, but he
had that was a year, and now he's back at D.C.
No, wait. Did he go to... No, I thought he went... Because we saw him score a goal in that game that opened Audi Field. Did we not?
That was his second year in MLS, but he wasn't on Atlanta anymore. He was on DC.
Really? I thought he spent 2 years in Atlanta. So that one is a weird one because he bounced around. And then remember, he went back to Argentina and then just didn't play. Then I thought, that's when he came back to DC after that one. But it's all confusing. Yeah. And no matter what, it breaks Atlanta United fans' hearts every single second that we talk about Yamil Assad.
By the way, in terms of Doyle talking about... like the family loans and stuff. We don't have to even add Red Bulls in this conversation because every player they've gotten through the Red Bull family has been borderline terrible. I'm looking at Gould Bronson and Omar Damari. And so we can just talk about
the Samuel Tete era was incredible this summer.
So I don't think we even have to add Red Bull in that.
No, but Yangel Herrera and Angelino are great calls. And Angelino will always be a legend. Coming into the league and throwing the 69 on his back in New York City. I mean, good Lord, the man had more swagger than we deserved. And I didn't know that he was going to, I didn't see in that moment that he was necessarily
he was be the third best left back in the entire world.
Yeah. I didn't see that coming, but that's awesome. That's awesome. And Yangel Herrera continues to be an absolute stud in La Liga. It was a pleasure to have him in our league and to be able to put him high in 22 under 22, or it might've been 24 under 24 at that time. I don't know, but it was awesome to watch him. I want to throw out, and this is maybe not like he was the best loan season, but it is a funny MLS loan. Julio Cesar and Toronto FC, that like pre-World Cup bump. We got the Brazilian number one into Canada and into Major League Soccer right before the World Cup in Brazil. How awesome was that? That was bizarre. That was quite strange.
He allowed me to use him as a trivia question, which was who was
that? I remember that. Yeah. Knocked that one out. Felt good about that one. Yeah. I miss early pandemic ETR trivia on Instagram, by the way. That was a truly, truly fun time. We might have to find a way to bring that back someday. Let's keep it moving. If you have a loan, by the way, that you remember that we do not, and we really tried to go back through, hit us up, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com.
One that doesn't totally fit, kind of fits. Juan David Cabezas was awesome on loan. Then Houston signed him, but then he never played because he was always hurt. So technically, if you only count the loan year, Juan David Cabezas was a good one.
You know, Juan David Cabezas reminds me of being on the field in Houston for their Open Cup win. Mm-hmm. I believe he came back he had just come back after a long-term injury and was an absolute stud in that game. And I remember us doing an interview with him in which he was extremely emotional. So thinking of you in these moments, Juan David Cabezas. Mark Bertram, Kathy, Jason, everybody associated with DC United apparently asked us on Twitter about the DC United head coaching search. Anders has written down in the rundown. What's a quick rundown again of the candidates? Yeah, what's a quick rundown of the candidates? I don't know, man. It keeps going back and forth.
Let's bring out our scrolls.
Exactly. Let's just go to @SoccerInsider and @MLSist and any other number of Twitter accounts that have helped guide us through this very interesting and coaching surf.
Can I bring one loan back in because sure, I just got there and it has to be mentioned? The god himself, Samuel Armenteros. Unconscious. Would shoot from anywhere.
Oh, yeah. Armenteros,
That is the MLS we'd belong.
Oh, man, that's a throwback. Okay. Didn't we have Innocent Imagara as another one?
He was not alone. He was a designated player signing.
Can you name, did he come, was it Tajikistan or Uzbekistan that he came from? Do we remember?
I think it was Uzbekistan.
I think it was the Uzbek League. Either way. What's going on with DC? So it was, we thought, and you were really driving this one, the Gonzalo Pineda job, but now... I believe Steve Goff is reporting that that's not going to happen, that there were issues there. And then in the same breath, Steve got an exclusive interview with Steve Cherundolo, who expressed his desire and readiness to be an MLS head coach. And so that felt like maybe that was like some tea leaves stuff there. Ezra Hendrickson was left out. I believe there were some other European candidates whose names I just didn't recognize, to be honest, that kind of got floated out there. What is our understanding of what's going on here with DC United? And what do they need? Like, if you were just to sort of like take the names out of it, Doyle, what would you say this team needs? We've talked about, hey, play guys in their positions. You have talent. But
that they need that. They absolutely positively need someone to just simplify and play guys in their positions. One of the, like, if you want to screw around with somebody's position, maybe consider making either Julian Gressel or Paul Areola a right back, because both guys have played a little bit of right back in their careers. Both guys have played a lot of right wing back in their careers, and there's a ton of sort of positional overlap in terms of responsibilities and skill set between wing back and fullback. And while both of those guys are on good money, it's not outrageous to pay good money for a good attacking fullback these days. So if you want to mess around with someone's position, do it with those guys and see if one of them will buy into it. But the rest of it, if you look at this team, this roster's not bad. This roster, it makes a lot of sense. Like Edison Flores, if he's healthy, he makes a lot of sense. Yamil Assad, if he's healthy, he's your left winger playing next to Flores as number 10, and they can interchange and overlap. Ola Kamara is probably not what he was 2 years ago, but he's a pretty decent number 9 in this league. And then you have either Areola or Gressel as your right winger. Like that, you can should be able to just attack with those front four and be a half-decent MLS team. So I think simplifying is the best approach to it. As for who that is, I don't know, man. There's been so many names thrown around. A lot of them are guys who haven't coached before. But I do think that in terms of the type of player DC are going after and the type of player who that's coming through their academy, you need to have someone who is committed to developing young players to eventually become starters or to sell on. Like they need to find their own Jim Curtin or Luigi Gonzalez is what it comes down to. And I'm not sure if that's someone in-house or someone in MLS or someone overseas.
Let me just to Doyle's point, I was going to say, I think actually the roster for DC has allowed them to have this time frame. Because they don't need to make a lot of moves. They're probably not going to make a lot of moves. And so they don't need a coach like maybe you look at some other teams, Atlanta maybe, for example, which is they need a coach because they need to finish their transfer window to get a team ready. DC kind of has this license to sort of find the right person by taking their time, although it's starting to feel like everyone's going to look like option B at this point, and it's going to just be a little weird, which, fine, whatever, that is what it is. And to Doyle's point, this is a club that had early success with homegrowns almost accidentally or because of their region. And they have pushed spending in that space over the last 2 years as other clubs have kind of reduced it in that similar place. And they signed a number of homegrowns this offseason and then had the 3 or 4 that played last year. So there is space for that with this team. But I think for who DC is and how they exist, it surprises me that they would go away from an MLS experienced coach, because they kind of have always operated themselves as, well, if we're a good MLS team, we'll always be competitive and we'll always have a shot. And so if you go out and you make the moves they've made in the league, but then you go out and get a coach from outside of MLS, I don't know how that all fits together.
How much would you say, because I specifically am thinking about Trundle, because we basically talked about all the other public candidates pretty in depth. What would you say about Steve Cherundolo in that sense? He is an outside the league candidate in the sense that he really didn't play in MLS. He hasn't been in MLS. He's been doing a lot of coaching in Germany, whether that be in reserve teams or U sides or in youth national teams, sort of consulting bases. Would it feel good? Would you be happy about? Do you want to see Steve Cherundolo get that opportunity? And would DC be the right place to get that opportunity?
I think we talked about on the last show that he made sense in Toronto, more as what they already have as a front office and then how he could bring his coaching ideas in, but not as much roster build or club
would
build.
But wouldn't that be the same in DC? Steve Cherundolo is not going to change ultimately what DC is. Like if you do need somebody who just to come in and simplify, like that seems like a pretty good option for a never been a professional head coach before, but have done this before and have, I would assume, given his experience in the game, a lot of clear ideas about how he thinks it should be played. Like, wouldn't that be a not so terrible entry point for a Steve Cherundolo and for DC United, a club that's probably not going to go out and, let's be honest, get like a Gabriel Heinze and spend that amount of money on a head coach? Somebody who you could say, one, has some juice, has a reputation, has some experience in name recognition, but is in their first job and might be the right sort of candidate for you.
I mean, you're taking a risk hiring somebody in his first head coaching job. And while I think David and I both like this roster, it's not a roster that's so good that it couldn't.
You couldn't mess it up.
Yeah.
Like, there's no Pasuelo on this roster.
Right. Yeah. Right? There's
you don't have an eraser.
Right. So, like, what happens if Steve Cherundolo is Ruud Gullit? You know, like, then you've lost another year and you're kind of starting from scratch at that point.
We'll see.
It would be tough to see them bringing in someone who doesn't have MLS experience, doesn't have head coaching experience, and whose approach you really only know from the interviews that you've done with him.
TBD. We'll see. DC, if you have any
and
thoughts.
The Bundesliga broadcast. He's on my TV every week. Every week I'm surprised. I'm like, whoa, that's Steve Cherundolo.
Nice.
But good times. Also, chance to throw a homegrown name out there for no reason. Not to play this year, but Jacob Green is a baller. Homegrown fullback. Potentially right back for DC United. Keep it up there.
# player kids. Maybe on your keeper team's radar
for sure.
Here, huh?
I shouldn't have told Weedy. Damn it.
But maybe
Weedy, his name's actually Brian
Yes,
Green.
Yes. But maybe that was a trick on your part to get me to make the draft pick, and then I'm sitting on a nothing. James Porter on Twitter, in the history of the MLS champions, that's MLS Cup champions, has a team upgraded its roster as much as crew? Currently, usually teams, I should say, lose players. This team's gotten deeper. Of course, BWP and hot boy Kevin Molina are the two we've talked about a lot. If Caden leaves, only right back lacks depth, maybe also dedicated defensive midfield. If this isn't the deepest championship roster returning, what is?
It's a great question. We had a little debate about this.
Yeah, I first thought Toronto, and maybe not Toronto in the additions side, but in the depth side, the Toronto team that then went to the CCL final and, of course, imploded because of injuries and exhaustion. But I think if you look at that Toronto team, and you're not talking about what happened in that season, you're just looking at the players, and that's, you know, sort of where we're at right now with the crew, too. They haven't done anything in 2021. They won in 2020. That team, I think, would be, in my opinion, would be deeper and
so
more talented, probably, but maybe not. I don't know.
Well, I understand your point in saying like depth of roster and then return for improvement for the Seattle Sounders from 16 to 17. And hindsight's 20/20 on some of this, I know, because at the time we weren't saying this. They added Victor Rodriguez. They added Kelvin Leerdam because Tyrone Mears, remember, was the start of the year they won it. Clint Dempsey returned from not playing in 2016. They also added Gustav Svensson. So for Seattle, they got better the year after they won MLS Cup. And of course, Jordan Morris had the injuries and was in and out of the roster. They got better as a club the year after they won MLS Cup just from Dempsey returning. And then some of those guys ended up hitting over the next few years, maybe not as much in 17, specifically with Svensson, who was good but got much better in his time in MLS.
Where would the Galaxy fit in this? Because, I mean, again, it's not additions necessarily. I'm trying to think off the top of my head right now, 2011 to 12, what they might have added, because you can't say Keane because he came in at the end of 11. But if you look at, like, depth and top-end talent, again, they'd be right there, though it is a little bit of a different era. But apart from that, I look around and I do think the crew have a case. The depth they already had, plus the changes they were making, the injuries really hurt them in the regular season, but, you know, they were, when healthy, the best team in MLS and proved that over the course. So any thoughts?
It's also one of the things that academies, if used correctly, could change in MLS, which is it gives you an ability to get better or maintain, because guys who can be difference makers don't have to be major cap hit guys. And so you can, for example, he talked about defensive midfield depth. That's Aiden Morris and Sebastian Berhalter. And you can have that and then spend money on Molino because you don't have to get a veteran in that defensive midfield spot, things like that.
Football Int on Twitter, unless you got a thought here, Doyle.
I'm just the big addition for the Galaxy from 2011 to 2012 was Marcelo Sarvis. And then they got Edson Buttle back as well.
But they lost Beckham, right? Sarvas.
Basically. No, 2012 was Beckham's last year.
That was his last year.
Oh, so Sarvas came in the year before they lost Beckham.
Yes. Yeah. So Sarvas, and he ended up starting 20-odd games, just resting Beckham and Juninho. So I think the 2011 to 2012 Galaxy got a lot better, even though they didn't actually play better in 2012. They struggled and just turned it on for the playoffs. But regardless of where this Columbus team's offseason fits in overall MLS history in terms of strengthening an MLS Cup winner, I think we're all completely on board with the two signings. So Bradley Wright Phillips and Kevin Molino for the Crew, for what they're trying to do for this year and next year, probably no brainers.
Perfect.
Like absolutely great moves for this team.
It also occurs to me too, that when we say, I know I said it about the Galaxy because of the spending profile and everything else and the way the league is set up. It's different now. Both these guys are free agents, which is different. That's a different mechanism than the Galaxy had to work with. And ultimately, we thought this might be the way that free agency would go, is that players would say, I want to get a ring, or I want to be on the best possible team, or I want the best situation for me. And a lot of times that means going to a good team. So that is also a different mechanism that the Crew and Tim Bezpachinko had to work with. Foot it on Twitter. Do you guys think Fabian Castillo, of course, we know him well, he's former FC Dallas, he's now with Xolos, he was at Querétaro for a little bit on loan in Liga MX. Would he be a good plan B if the Galaxy can't get Pavone back?
No.
Fabian Castillo, I think, had 2 goals and 2 assists for Xolos last year. If you're going to go, I understand the idea, like a guy already connected to MLS, but if you're the LA Galaxy and you can't get Pavone and you're going to go down to Mexico to get a replacement, you can get a guy that you want and is a bona fide starter. You don't need to get Castillo just because he knows MLS. I think we've reached the point where it's a legitimate move for star Liga MX players to come to the US. And you have Chicharito, you have Jonah, so you have a bunch of the sell of like, hey, come be a part of this. Fabian Castillo would not be the right move.
All right, we'll end it right there. Zach Smith had a couple good ones. The first one was about Austin FC. Why are Austin's MLS veteran signings going to be significantly better than Miami's? There is a premise there that he is going after, which is that Austin's are going to be better. We don't actually know that they're going to be better. Zach says, I don't know why, even though it just feels like numerically they got about the same amount of MLS vets, I have nearly double the optimism for Austin's signing. So I'm just going to guide you through here real quick some of those signings. First, on the Inter Miami side, Victor Yua, that one didn't really work out. Jay Chapman didn't really work out. Let's see, who else? Ben Sweat, he's now moved on.
Can I jump on this and just say, one, the Miami ones weren't done. So the biggest one would have been LGP, and he wasn't there until halfway through the summer.
Good point.
The second was 3 starters on the back line for Austin are going to be MLS veterans, and only one, because Ben Sweat was the only one that was there, was for Miami. So that's going to be the big difference.
Alvis Powell put a good amount on the back line. Just saying. Lee Wynn got
Alvis
moved.
Alvis Powell is the worst starter in Major League Soccer.
Just set you up on that one. Luis Robles looked like it was going to be good. He got hurt, unfortunately, and now is retired. AJ De La Garza, of course, he's already moved on. I mean, you go through these veteran signings, Juan Agudelo, Roman Torres, back to Seattle. You go through them for Inter Miami, and Will Trapp, he's now in Minnesota. Breck Shea, he did resign though, so you got that one. You mentioned LGP, but a lot of them, it was 1 year and gone. Either contributions weren't big enough, or that just wasn't the right place for them. On the flip side, if you're looking at Austin, we still don't know yet. Doyle, do you think they've done the right thing on the MLS veteran side? Do these guys feel like ones to you that will stick, or are we going to be having a similar conversation when we talk about Nick Lima or Cascante or Ben Sweat or Segura or Danny Hoosen or Alex Ring, and down the line, Hector Jimenez, Tarbell, Stuver. I mean, they got a lot of guys in that same vein.
They do. Ring stands out. Ring stands out as one of the best in the league at his position, which is why they paid so much money for him. And the type of centerpiece acquisition from within the league that Miami were not able to make. I think Lima is really good as well. And those are the two that are just obviously such good moves, even though it cost a lot. But then I think some of the kind of under the radar stuff, like Hector Jimenez can play 5 different spots. You know, he's in his, you know, early 30s now, and he's not going to be a starter or a star, but he's the type of guy who, if you use him intelligently, he will soak up minutes, and he's also reportedly just a great locker room guy as well. Beasler, we had this conversation. I mean, he looked washed the last 2 years. He does not look like anything close to the same Matt Beasler. So I,
there have to be questions there. But then some of the lower, like the lower profile ones, Stroud and Gallagher, like I like those two budget signings. Like you need guys, if you're going to survive a full season in MLS, you need guys on minimum salaries who can give you good minutes. And I think both of those guys have shown the ability to do that. Fagundes is a really good flyer for where he is in his career and his talent level. About the only one that I really don't like, just straight up don't like, is Danny Hoosen. That one still doesn't make sense to me. But you know, maybe now that he's 30 and playing for an expansion team, maybe now he's about
to well, in fairness, he's playing for a soccer team and not an Almeida team now. That is a massive difference. Whether you like him or not, I'm just saying.
Yeah, his whole career, teams have taken chances on him and been like, oh, he just looks so good.
Yeah, well, look.
He's obviously going to score 10 goals. He's the Dutch Juan Agudelo. He just like he passes the eye test if you just watch the highlights, but then you watch him play full 90 and you're like, it's just not going to
well,
happen.
The thing
Juan
is.
Agudelo played in Holland, so he might be the Dutch Juan Agudelo.
By the way, but Joe Corona is going to be great for them, for Austin. So. That ought to go real well for them.
Of the names you said for Miami, I think Will Trapp is the only one who you would have thought was in any way a piece that they were like, we want to be here for a while. And we're like, not building around, but is like a legitimate player we're excited about. Everyone else was a 1 or 2 year rental, 32 plus, or just a position of need that they just found someone like Breck. I don't even know how to describe Breck, I guess. That's a mistake for me to even attempt to. Where with Austin, there's a direction of the things they're trying to do and the way the players fit in. I mean, Lima and Ring are desirable players for them who are going to be there for 3 to 5 years.
You hope that's the case for Austin. I think Zach Smith had another good one here. We'll go quick now because we're running out of time. Thanks for all the questions, by the way. He says it's not being talked about, but is DeAndre Yedlin not the perfect fit for Atlanta? Bello and DeAndre on the outside. He's an international veteran. He would join Atlanta's side lacking really any of that. And he's got that ATL swag already. Now, look, I would love to see DeAndre Yedlin in Atlanta, but as I said on the last show, I don't think you're going to see DeAndre Yedlin in Major League Soccer. And if you want to dunk on me when he inevitably comes here because I've jinxed it, that's fine. But Atlanta doesn't seem like the place that he would end up. You would think that Heinze has his own folks that he wants. And they also have a lot of right backs already. I mean, they went and got Jürgen Damm, as you reminded me in the pre-show meeting, Dave. You've got already Brooks Lennon. Franco Escobar can play out there. This one doesn't seem like it makes a ton of sense. But
well, you have it backwards. Escobar is a right back. Dom and Lennon can't. Well, Lennon can play as a right back, but like Dom and Lennon are more like wing backs.
Yedlin be the wing back though? So then why would you go? That's what I'm saying. You've already got the spot filled.
Yeah, you have the idea right. You just have the positions wrong for those particular guys. And it doesn't make sense for Atlanta, especially because if you want. Watch modern teams play, man. When Alphonso Davies is going, marauding up the left side for Bayern Munich, they don't have an attacking right back on the right side. It's like you don't need symmetry, you need balance. And if you have George Bello, who you're trying to sell, right, and you're going to sell George Bello because he's such an impressive attacking weapon as an overlapping left back. If you have him at that side, you don't want a veteran right back whose best asset is his attacking, because that will completely neuter George Bello's ability to go forward. So it doesn't make sense for Atlanta. It just does not at all.
Ricky Ricardo on Twitter says, Atlanta and Moises Caicedo, how nuts is even the thought of that? I am not... I don't know that much about Moises Caicedo other than what I see in the rumor mill, which is that he's very good and big teams would like to sign him. What do we know about Moises Caicedo? Give me the who's got it? Who can give me the quick scouting report about how good he is and what this would mean?
He, at 19, covers a ton of ground, just controls the game, and is the presence in central midfield. He's the first player you see when you watch his teams play, whether it's De Valle, and now he's already doing with Ecuador. 19 years old. A lot of people felt like he was the best performer in Copa Lib. I think Man U was the big rumor that started it all, which has gone away, but there's 3 or 4 other Premier League teams that are in it. There's a few ways you could say how nuts is it to think about this, but one is if this young transfer player thing comes about, it means that Atlanta could have 4 DPs. That's what this would be, because you'd bring Caicedo in with the other 3 still there, because it seems like him or Barco could potentially be this young transfer whatever thing player, which... Doyle said in the meeting we were talking about, a player of Caicedo's ability has now come to and been linked with MLS. that part's less wild, but I think to be able to fit them in one team is that next level, next stage for an MLS team.
All right, keep it rolling here. We have Impact fans asking us about the rebrand. Supposedly that's coming down on Thursday. We are planning to talk to either Kevin Gilmore or the creative force behind this thing about what's going on. So look out for that. The questions are all over the place. Is it necessary? Do you like the idea? Until I see it, I can't really comment on that, but we will talk to that guy or those people. So let us know what you want us to ask, Montreal fans. Let us know. 401-206-0MLS. Also, Chicago Fire, congratulations to you for pulling it back and resetting. It's going to be a new brand for the Fire as well after 2 years, the second of which will be a lame duck year for that crown.
Which means crest. Get everything you can from this year, because in like 40 years, this is my retirement plan. I'm just going to sell 2020 Chicago Fire logo stuff on whatever secondary market. So if you have anything, send it my way.
You're a financial planner, with a real plan, hit up Dave as well. That would be
But come on, get out of here.
All right. Here's an interesting one that I like. We have to hit before we get out of here. Mr. Stuff and Other Things, who's Chris Awesome 63, who's really doing a lot with his username there. Is Berhalter giving Josie Altidore 2021 as his last chance to be a part of the national team, Doyle?
I think if it kind of feels like that, yeah. And he was. Berhalter was pretty explicit last year when he talked about Josie, calling him still the most talented forward in the pool. And I don't think there's any question about that, but also saying like, he can't stay healthy. He needs to stay healthy if he's going to be a regular part of this team and help us. And the hope is that Josie can, find the fountain of youth a little bit. He's still only 31, which isn't super old, and prove that he can be of use still in CONCACAF, and then maybe he finds 2 years of legs and makes it all the way to the World Cup itself. But, with the amount of good young forwards in the pool, like it's not just Josh Sargent anymore. It's Daryl Dike. It's Ayo Akinola. It's Sebastian Soda. It's Nico Giocchini. It's, Matthew Hoppe now. Like, it just goes on and on. Jeremy Bobasi, like, it goes on and on and on. And none of these kids are wanting to wait their turn. Every single one of them wants to get out there and beat whoever's in front of them. And that means Josie, and that means Jossie, and that means Sargent. And so it's what you want. It's a good problem to have. And hopefully Josie is up to the challenge, because I agree with Greg Berhalter. He is still the most talented forward in the player pool. And just from you're a big narrative guy, Weeby, but just from a narrative standpoint, I would love to see Josie make it to the 2022 World Cup, be our 20-minute game super sub, get that first World Cup goal, which has eluded him, and kind of end his national team career on a high point.
I would like that too, and I would extra like that would be the established role, because then I wouldn't have to be on pins and needles as I thought about Josie Altidore's hamstrings and the days and months and years leading into a major tournament. And then once he hits the field, he is the most talented, and I agree with Greg, I agree with you, forward too. And the thing that I love right now from Josie is that he's playing like a cheerleader extraordinaire on Twitter at all times with these young players. And like, that's the sort of thing, and I know it's like very front-facing and that sort of thing. I hope that it's happening, and I expect it probably is behind the scenes as well, where he can be a little bit of like a place to bounce ideas off of, because he has had a long, varied career and different things that he has dealt with for those guys. And then just a supporter, just to be like, yeah, you guys are friggin' awesome. Like, go do it. Here's more confidence, as if you need it, it seems like right now. But I like that a lot. Quick ones here from DG and Nicholas Welder that go opposite directions here. DG says, does Peter Vermees need a GM for Kansas City to get better while he has Brian Bliss? And Nicholas Welder says, I'm a huge Sporting KC fan, and I hate to even ask this, but is this team in need of looking elsewhere for a head coach? Yes, our regular season stats are unreal, but how many one-and-done playoffs should we stand for? You should stand down, Nicholas Welder. You should stand down. Peter Vermees is your man. You've had a decade of sustained success. No, you haven't had as many long runs in the playoffs as you wanted, but you've won a ton of trophies. You've painted that wall a bunch, and you've done so with less resources to sign players than other teams have. They've done a lot of, like, backflips and cartwheels to get things done, whether it be draft success and then selling players who were kind of rentals, or Rossell or Christian Namath comes to mind, for allocation injections. Now you're spending money again. And yes, some of the signings have not been good, particularly on the back line, but a lot of the other ones have been good. And Sporting Kansas City still finished atop the West last year in a pandemic. Come on. Come on. Come on. Taylor Hester on Twitter: who are the best MLS teams to follow on social media? A combo of high quality soccer content and funny and engaging with fans. And FC Dallas is out here tweeting about slime cannons. So you know they're going on that list. Bam. They're live listening to Extra Time right now. Vancouver are too. I do like the Vancouver Whitecaps. I like
Vancouver. Yep. Will tweet about anything. Like, mm-hmm. You got to follow them because it comes 24 hours a day, or maybe it's just because I'm on the West Coast. I don't know. And they will, anything going on, they will find a way to link their club to and get involved, which I appreciate.
Respect.
San Jose is also really strong. And you have to give a shout out to my guy Willie in New England, because he proceeded to use it as a hit list over the course of the New England Revolution playoff run to just pick out every person who ever picked against the Revs one time and give them their due, which I respect.
Yeah, we got whacked. We got whacked a couple times on that one. Shout out to Willie. If you got some thoughts there, hit us up. Let us know who you like to follow. Just going through some of these other questions here. Thomas on Twitter has an interesting question. Can Austin Trusty fulfill his potential despite a tough first season in Colorado? They just re-signed him, re-upped him, and Porik Smith had some really nice things to say about Trusty. They also re-upped Lawless Abubakar. What do you think on Austin Trusty, Doyle? He's got the tools, it seems like. He had a couple good years. Actually, he was the homegrown in Philly that had the sustained success before Mark McKenzie did. He basically played, I think he played every minute of one of those seasons in Philly.
Yep, in 2018. And then midway through 2019, he lost his job and got traded to the Rapids after that. Yeah, he struggled to start in 2020 for Colorado, but I thought he played much better down the stretch. And he has stuff that you can't teach, just in terms, he's, you know, 6'3" and left-footed, and he moves well. He obviously, he's not as polished as Mark McKenzie, right? If you want, it's the natural comparison because they were teammates and they came through the same academy. McKenzie, he's almost like a quarterback. He's so good at doing his checkdowns and picking the right pass. Trusty doesn't seem to have that, but that's okay. He doesn't need to be a generational distributor of the ball from the back line. He just needs to do the Aaron Long thing. Just make the right pass, don't turn the ball over, and then defensively be, you know, an elite type of player. He has the skill set to, or he has the physical skill set to do that. He did improve, I thought, again throughout the course of this past season, and he's playing for Robin Fraser, who is still one of the maybe five best center backs ever to play in MLS. So it's a really good situation for him, and now they've made this monetary commitment to him. So I'm pretty bullish on Trusty's future for Colorado, though, just from a national team perspective, because we've been talking about that, 2026. Like, I think the door is closed on him almost certainly for 2022.
All right, let's get one more in here. We got about 3 minutes. Dave, I know you had one in the mailbag that I thought maybe your reaction tells me perhaps no.
We had two questions, one from Lars Pettersson and one from Chris Kingston, and they were basically all similar in the with the news of North Carolina FC dropping down, there's been a lot of talk around what USL League One and USL Championship will look like and the MLS Next Reserve League. And kind of the questions were all, Philly used it well. What have other teams not done well? Why do some teams not have one? What could be better? So in my point of view, I think the teams that invested and cared about having two teams, using them properly, they've seen the rewards, both from a USL and an MLS level. And then a lot of MLS teams just punted on it and chose not to be focused on it. And a bunch of teams don't even have one. So making every team have a reserve league team or whatever it'll look like is probably better off long-term than having a bunch of teams with nothing. But the teams that chose to take a USL mainly championship team seriously, they are going to lose the ability to have these young players compete against adults, which was the entire point of doing this. And you've seen the quality that's come from young players who at 16, 17, 18 went in and had to play in Charleston and play in New Mexico and play against Las Vegas and some of the better teams in USL and get those experiences. If you do 100% lose that, I think that's unfortunate for the MLS or the US soccer pyramid.
All right. 401-206-0MLS. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. This has been a fun show. We should probably do this more often. We're also thinking about trying to do it maybe even once a week. So if that sounds like a good idea, let us know. I think that's all we have here today. So I'll see you guys on Thursday. We'll have our Super Draft preview next Tuesday. Just another reminder. And then I didn't mention this side of the programming note, but on Thursday, because the Super Draft is that day and we will be streaming it to you at 2 p.m. Eastern on MLS channels, myself, Charlie Davies, Matt Doyle, and then Devin Kerr, we will delay taping Extra Time until that Friday. So we'll basically do grades on that day from the Super Draft and then look ahead at how those players fit in and where every team currently stands. So look out for Tuesday and Friday next week. Subscribe, rate us, tell your friends. Enjoy your week. Adios.